As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the brand new edition of The Ruck, our top-rating podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. Keyboards of the media all over the country were worn out for the asterisk key after Eddie Jones's reaction to his own team at Twickenham on Saturday. At least he had a reaction. There was very, very little from the crowd. Our two top panellists today are both deemed widely to be Welsh. Steve James, Steve James, now the cricket writer for the Times, and in this very studio, he's flourishing a bottle of champagne for some obscure award that they won. Is deemed to be Welsh, but he did actually lead the Dragons, the Glamorgan cricket team, to the county championship. So no wonder. But he's actually born in what many would say is the dark side. It's sort of semi-dark. Also, Stuart Barnes, he's Welsh on and off. Welsh, notably when playing for Wales Schoolboys and Newport, and returns to Welshness every now and again when Wales win the Grand Slam. So we got people here nicknamed J-Mo and Judas. Steve, be very remiss of me, as the build-up to the Ashes is going on, not to ask you about the cricket. We leave Ben Stokes. You've already put your colours to the mast by encouraging more abuse between the team. You did say that the Aussies have taken it a little bit too far, but you like the contest on. Now, we've got a couple of fast bowlers down already. Is it going as badly as it seems at the moment?
Doesn't seem to be going great, does it? I actually think it's going to be a really interesting series because they're two quite interesting sides. They're two deeply flawed sides. There are a lot of good players who are going to be playing this series, and there are a lot of players who aren't that good, really. And you might not even be sure whether they're actually test players. So a lot's going to depend on how those sort of big guns perform in that series. I'm worried about the Aussie bowling, though. This Mitchell Starc is the real worry. The left arm who's quick and has got about 5 hat-tricks in the last 2 weeks or something, hasn't he? So he's the one who can cause some real problems.
Is he nasty too?
Well, nasty enough, I think. He's probably not as nasty as Mitchell Johnson was, but he's a danger man. If he went down injured, then England would be very happy. But yeah, looking forward to it. It'd be good.
And you going out for the one-day series after that?
Yeah, after Christmas, yeah.
Okay, well, I saw you bat. I think no wonder you were going out for the one day. sorry, that was... You scored a million runs, mate. That was teasing. Stuart, you just cleared up one thing for us. Last week, you wanted Mike Brown out of the England team.
Yes.
He was the worst fool ever to have played at fullback. Today, if I read your piece right, you want him back. Or actually, you want him
back for a farewell, isn't it?
If he's unfit... You don't want him to lose his place because he's unfit, but you do want him to be kicked out if he's fit. Is that correct?
I would like Mike Brown to be fit for selection and not be picked. I think Mike Brown's one of these blokes who, whatever you think of him as a player, and we'll be serious for a second here, he has put everything in to the England cause, hasn't he? Ever since they picked him. You know, he might have his flaws and his weaknesses, but he has been... He's epitomised England. He's sort of... the hugely committed guy who's not quite top class. And I think Brown's the sort of bloke who would rather lose his place by saying there's a youngster come up, we want him now, rather than being unavailable for selection because of head injury and just watching his place in the England team disappear. I think, you know, as a fan, I would say, let's get Anthony Watson in. As a former player, I have some empathy with Brown, and I would like to see him go the right way, which is sort of out on his shield.
Okay. What about Elliot Daly? What does anybody want to play Elliot Daly at fullback? It seems like an ideal fullback to me.
I think Watson's got slightly more speed. Yeah. I think Watson is slightly stronger. And I think...
Is Daly a better footballer? Is he that footballing ability wasted on the wing?
No, I don't think it's, wasted. I think Daly for England is Eddie Jones's dream of a 21st century Campo, in that your number is 11 or 14, but you play anywhere you want. Yeah. And if you remember last year with England, the good stuff he was doing, he was coming off his wing, those lovely kicks when things weren't going right, picking little holes there. I think he's at his best. He's a floater. He's free to play anywhere he wants, and it doesn't really matter whether he's 11 or 15. Okay. And I think Watson gives you more direct counter-attacking power.
Well, Watson okay under the high ball? Sorry.
I think so.
I think so. But the thing is, with Watson, it seems to me that when he's playing on the wing, he can't almost exclusively stays out there, and he doesn't look like part of the game. But as soon as he was switched to fullback on the Lions tour, he thought, God, I've got to do something here. And he did try and run from the back. And again, he tried two or three runs from the back on Saturday. So, you know, you cannot have a bloke who doesn't pass the ball and never beats a man, I don't think. But listen, I just wanted to check that I don't think I've quite got it, but if he's injured... You want him to stay, but he can't play if he's injured, so you'd rather him be fit and dropped.
I would rather him be fit and dropped rather than go through the pain of thinking, I've lost my place because I'm injured, never going to get it back. Does that make sense?
It does. Now, just being completely serious for a moment, Stuart, Saturday, watched, I think you and Miles Harrison on. You tried to keep the pot boiling a little bit, but it must have been difficult because there was really nothing for you to feed off, was there?
There haven't been too many 80 minutes that have felt like 80 hours as a commentator. That was one of them, yeah. It's really hard. You know, you can judge a game as a commentator. If it goes really quickly and you think you've been bouncing around with your fellow commentator and it's all gone well, you know it's a pretty good game. If you're thinking, you're looking at your clock and you're thinking, how long to go? And while Miles is talking, I'm thinking, what point can I make that isn't irredeemably negative? What can I do to just try and keep this game going by saying it's not good, but why isn't it good? Is it X, Y, or Z slowing them down? You know, then that's pretty tough. And I came out with a headache, and normally headaches with me are too much red wine. But this was actually just trying to think my way through 80 minutes.
No, Steve, you were at Cardiff, but your impressions of Twickenham will come to Cardiff in a minute.
Yeah, what's in the press room? Yeah, it was an awful game to watch. Absolute tripe, really.
it was the worst third quarter of play I've ever seen in any game. Nothing remotely happened at all.
Yeah, no. I think it just goes to show that, you know, England didn't have the best three players, did they? Farrell, Itoje, and Billy Wainapola. And sometimes it can be quite difficult when you haven't got your three best players. I mean, they just couldn't get anything going, could they? Couldn't get over the gain line, couldn't get any quick ball. If Argentina had kicked their kicks, they might easily have won, and might not exactly been undeserved, that would it, if Argentina had pipped it. So yeah, it was a bad day, but I suppose at the end of the day they did win it.
I've got kind of wider point to make here, and I think it's a warning to everybody in the international game. International rugby comes along in torrents now. England have already played Argentina twice. If you haven't played a team for 4 years, 5 years, it becomes a big game. Saturday, the crowd were going through the motions. There was no energy at the start, no energy during the anthems, no energy throughout it. There was no climax or whatever. And I think, it really, and not singling out Twickenham, £100 a throw, that felt nothing remotely like an international. I thought there was more... there was more bite and more contest yesterday when the Scarlets kids played Leicester. I mean it, Exeter seconds. There were more people who wanted to know in that. And I think it is a warning that there are too many test games, no question about it. Anyway, just picking the bones of some of it, Stuart. Where can they go? We said, where did it go wrong? It's very difficult to say because there was too much wrong. I agreed with everything that Steve said this morning about the Wales-Australia game. What I didn't agree with was when you said England got lots of carriers, Steve, because I couldn't see any apart from Courtney Laws. Stuart, where's it got to come from? Who's going to spark them into life?
Well, they've got short-term problems because you said who gets them over the gain line. You look at Ben Teo. And Eddie Jones is a big fan. And last season in the Six Nations, England was struggling to get over the gain line and to get any momentum behind the scrum until he came off the bench. And it's feasible they could have lost to both Wales and France. And then, with that Ireland game, it would have been an appalling Six Nations for England. He came on, and with a combination of power and good footwork, got England over the gain line, over the try line, and he changed the season for them. And Eddie Jones understands that Teo's just not a crash-bang wallet player. He's important. And I think that's why he's coming back into the squad till Wednesday, because he wants to reintegrate him as fast as he can for the Six Nations. But with Australia coming up, that they do have a real issue. I have long thought that Ford, Farrell and Joseph doesn't work because it lacks any punch. And England get very lateral. Their back play is persistently lateral. It relies on George Ford putting together a fantastic pass to get any momentum into their game. You've got to have some. Ford needs someone where he can go to and say, just carry it over, especially against a game like Argentina when it's slow ball. And if you don't want to kick it away but you want to keep it, what you can't do is try and go too wide with slow ball, because you get smashed. And if England do that against the Aussies, they're going to get humped over the gain line and going to be in big trouble. So there's no real obvious answer.
What's your ideal midfield then for England, sir?
My ideal is Ford, Farrell and Ben Teo. I think that's a bloody good midfield. I was hoping that Henry Slade would come in and not just come up with the little exquisite touches that everyone is so enamoured with, but would actually run hard lines. And he has run them at 13 for Exeter, but he didn't run them for England. So
his passing was a disappointment as well, because he's normally a good passer.
His whole game was really poor. But bear in mind, you know, he's done bits and pieces as a 12 throughout his career. It's only as a 13 that he has been consistently good. So I would like to see him at 13.
He's barely played at 12, has he, for Exeter? That's one of the problems.
Where do you stand? Are you still Farrell 10, Ford 10? It's the endless debate, Steve.
It is the endless debate. And a lot depends on the 12 thing. I mean, I'd like to ask Stuart, say if England had two magnificent centres, okay, rather than Farrell.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Carling, Guscott, Greenwood, Tyndall. Who would you play at 10 then?
Who are the two magnificent centres that I was for?
No, okay, you know what I mean.
Not very nice.
You know what I mean.
Charming.
Or Driscoll, or I don't know.
No, first of all, I think I'm with Jones on this, and I'm with Gatland, who's got there eventually, and I'm with Hansen when Marnonu became more than a crash-bang merchant. I think your 10-12 is crucial. Your 12 plays closest to the 10. In the game now, biggest change between when I played in 1872 and now is the speed of defence. And everything shifts like a kaleidoscope. And in my game, I like to think, everyone shut up, I'll make all the decisions. I'm the little Napoleon. Can't do that now. You haven't got a hope. You have to have someone at 12 who can be a second pair of eyes and ears. And that's why I think 10-12 is more important than 12-13. And that's why I think Ford and Farrell are ideal. And I think they are set in stone until the World Cup.
Do you reckon?
But until he gets a big 13... he's got a problem, and it's with Joseph or Slade. England just look lateral. And the other problem is, can they find them? They haven't got themselves a big meathead on the wing. You know, Australia will find big wingers. New Zealand will pick blokes like Naholo or Surveyor. They come off their wing and they make angles and they give you options. It's not happening with England.
I agree with your point, but 10 is still the more important position, isn't it?
10 is the most important position.
I just get the impression that Farrell's playing at 12 because we haven't found anyone else.
That might have been the case once. I think he's playing at 12 because Jones believes in the two footballing inside backs. It's the Carter Nonu, it's the Sexton Farrell thing, it's the Ford Farrell thing. That's what Eddie thinks, and I tend to agree with him.
Just before we go on to Cardiff, Stuart, Jonathan Joseph, we are waiting for him to come through. We're all thinking, you know, he's on the verge, he's had a great game, but then he doesn't have a great game. Is he going to fulfil himself, or should they already be starting to look elsewhere?
He's had a lot of caps. He's scored quite a lot of tries. He was brilliant against Scotland when Ford and Farrell clicked, and that's my point. If 10 and 12 work, you can have an average player and he could cause carnage. I think he's had too many mediocre games, both for Bath this season, the Lions tour, he didn't really cut the mustard. And whilst I thought Slade had a really poor game and looked nervous and nothing worked, I would play him 13 against Australia because I think his potential is greater. I think Jones will go Joseph, and I understand why, because it's a big game, and England certainly need to win this one. And
I Jones thought he would have gone and played at 13 for that Argentina game.
Yeah, if he'd have done that, then there'd have been more chance of him doing of keeping him in for that game. But
going back to the two playmakers, interesting. Geach, Ian McGeachan, always says that he prefer his two playmakers to be at 10 and 13 rather than 10 and 12, because that gives you more options. If Slade was to come through at 13, that might give England another interesting option, wouldn't it?
Oh, well, I think so. But Stuart, I think, and if it's going to be Joseph, I mean, Elliot Daly's not a basher or a beast, no. But he's got far more, in my opinion, to offer in terms of playing, getting people outside him if he plays at 13.
There's a real issue with Elliot Daly, and it's been going on for a few years now. He defends well at 11. 13, he gets himself in bad positions. His body position is wrong. He misses a hell of a lot of tackles. And whilst all of us love to see the attacking flowing game, that position, I think coaches call it the edge now, that 15-metre line wide, you have to have someone who knows that. And what Joseph does do, he's very well organised.
And that's why Jonathan Davis is so good for Wales.
And Jonathan Davis, the same. And that's why I wouldn't play Daly there, I think, until he can, for the Wasps, really make that position his defensively, not in attack. He stays on the wing.
Steve,
going back to your point, Steve, I'm not sure I said England had loads of carriers.
Said they had more carriers.
Did I?
Yeah.
Well, I think they have if they get Mako, Billy, Laws at six. Okay. And Itoji back in it.
Yeah, to be fair to Steve.
Sorry,
they need more carriers. Yeah.
It's all right, the rest of the report was okay, though. Don't worry.
We're going through your report later.
I thought you were going to storm out from it. Steve, Wales, Australia, when it came on, it looked like someone had thrown the fast forward switch compared to Twickenham. But it's good for the neutral, but they don't have neutrals for these games. First of all, we'll come on to Australia in a minute and the danger they face to England. But you at least sort of saw a germ in the Welsh 10-12 thing. You thought that worked reasonably well.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, it was a really good test match, wasn't it? I mean, compared to that England game, it was totally different. It's always tricky, you know. As I was writing that report for today, you don't want to take too much from a defeat, do you? Because at the end of the day, Wales lost, and that's 13 times on the trot. And myself and Stuart were talking earlier and saying, you know, there must be something in the mental side of that, because it just keeps happening. But you know, for me, watching that game, there was definitely something for Wales to take, because they did play so differently, didn't they?
Yeah.
They passed the ball a lot more. There were a lot more offloads, and as a consequence of that, they made a lot of mistakes as well, which I suppose is understandable, isn't it? You're trying to play a new game, you're going to get things wrong, and there were times in their own 22 when they tried to play too much. But
what about half time where they tried to play when all they had to do was kick the ball out?
Yeah, I know. And there was one time when Dan Bigger tried that cross kick from a penalty, and there was another time when Gareth Davis tried a ridiculous offload to Falata. You know, just calm down. I think the most striking thing for me was, you say 10-12 went okay. Owen Williams did okay. He wasn't outstanding. He did okay. Was some of the handling from the forwards, you know, prop Rob Evans. I mean, he looked like an outside half at times, didn't he? You know, some of the passing, some of the handling, even others like
Jimmy. Do you mean his skills or his shape? I need to know. What era are we talking?
He does look a bit like Barnes, doesn't he?
Got better hands,
though. But I mean, him and, you know, Jake Ball had some nice touches. Alan Wynne had some nice touches. You know, he got Falata in the wide towers. Falata's hands let him down on a few occasions, which is, you know, really, really unusual. And they got unlucky with that. The Beale try shouldn't have been a try, and that did come at an important time. You know, Wales were really on top there, and I think it was it 22-16 at the time? You know, if Wales had scored there rather than Australia, it might have been a different game. You know, I hate to take consolation from defeats. You shouldn't do that too often. But I think on this occasion, you know, there was something for the Welsh to be quite positive about.
Stuart, you followed the Wallabies through their recent revival, and then you've seen them on Saturday. They seem to be genuinely coming back now, don't they?
Listen, with Australia, people who said it was a crisis and, you know, what's going to happen with Australia, talking nonsense. They don't, unlike England and in particular New Zealand, they do not have the strength of talent. Mike Checker, who is an extremely intelligent and smart coach, understands that. The modern game, international rugby, whether we like it or not, it peaks around World Cups. And Australia have to dip for them to be able to rise again. They have to do that. And we've seen that dip coming. We're seeing the rise now. They've had the bad 2 years. They're starting again. they're going to miss Ledesma, who's gone back to Argentina, and they could do with him because the scrum is not what it was. But he's left them a pretty decent set piece. And any Australian team that has a decent set piece is dangerous. And I know, you know, Foley's a very erratic goal kicker, but he's a clever playmaker. Will Genya is a class act. He's one of the best scrum halves in the world. And where I said England don't have big meatheads to crash you over the game line, Australia can combine the skill of someone like Beale with Kurandrani and the pace of Folau. I know he's not on this tour, but looking towards the World Cup, they're already appearing like dangers. And looking towards this Saturday, I always think, be careful what you ask for, Eddie, when he says, I want a full-strength Wallabies at their best.
Sure. Steve, no follow, but they seem to have, great player though he may be, they seem to have got round that by having Beale's talent, which they actually used him second, third receiver sometimes as well, with perhaps ironically, two meatheads with respect to them in the centre.
I mean, Kurandrani had a brilliant game, I thought.
Yeah. He's a very good player.
Yeah. He always does against Wales.
He's a big man.
They've got other ball players. I mean, Rhys Hodges on the wing is a decent ball player. I was talking to Stuart earlier, he can play 10, 12, 13.
Anyway.
15. They were a dangerous side. They were so clinical in that first half. Wales made two bad mistakes with exits, didn't they, from restarts. Rob Emmers knocked on the first time. The second time, Steph Irvine's under pressure tried a kick and it went horribly wrong. Both times, they just went through the phases and scored. 15, 16 phases each time. You give them a sniff and they score. They're such a dangerous side.
And that's what's interesting there, Steve. The only time Argentina were able to put any degree of phases together was right at the end, wasn't it, when they got 30 phases in a try. Australia will keep the ball. Australia are very good at holding it. They've gone from being a team that have got a myriad of first phase moves to a team that keep the ball and then try and exploit, put people like Kurandrani in space. And if they're keeping ball against England, it's all well and good saying, wasn't England's defence great against Argentina? I frankly, you know, any defence would have looked good against that cumbersome outfit.
Yeah.
It's going to be a completely different test for England. And if Australia do come at pace, and I hope they do, because Jones is right, England need a challenge, then we're in for a fascinating game.
Take your point about Genia as well, Stuart. He was outstanding again on Saturday. I think I'm right in saying, when England won 3-0 out in Australia, Genia wasn't playing.
Well, he hadn't played 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge factor. Yeah, the way he controlled the game on Saturday was brilliant.
Steve, what about their pack? I mean, we all keep on saying, oh, England, they've got a great pack and they've got a great show. Well, actually, it's a decent, but rather than being great, I really do think that. And, you know, we know England hopefully will come out steaming with passion and try and put the finger on the Wallabies up front. But it's not as if it's sort of Al Baxter scrummaging there. Now, they don't look too bad, do they?
No, they're better. Although, in fairness, Wales did put them under some pressure. I know at the end, Australia were down to seven men because Hooper was off. But generally, I thought the Welsh scrum went pretty well. I thought they might miss Sampson Lee. But, that Australian scrum is, you know, it's not like when Andrew Sheridan was causing all sorts of problems at Twickenham all those years ago. As Stuart said, that, you know, they've got a solid platform. Their lineup's pretty good, isn't he? Adam Coleman's a fine second row, isn't he? In the tight and in the loose. He's feisty as well, isn't he, Coleman? Bit of edge about him.
Just going to the next international as well, Stuart. Germany, Brazil at Leipzig.
I wrote about that in my Sky column last Monday, and I didn't follow up.
Brazil were hard done by. Germany won by quite a few.
7-1.
But I think the crowd at the Bruno Placina Stadium in Leipzig were a factor as well. They're more animation at Twickenham. And I think, actually, this week, it's Germany-USA. Seriously. And blimey, what a game that is for the future of rugby. If one of those two countries could take off, then...
Oh, can we give up on America? I'm fed up with this whole America's coming through, the great American corporate dream. Let's focus on Germany and the fanatics in Leipzig, Steve.
Okay, all right.
Talking about crowds, Steve, we probably should mention what happened in Cardiff. Obviously, a lot of people couldn't get into the ground in time for the kickoff.
Yeah.
Different security checks. They were, you know... It was a security check for every person going into the ground. There were a lot of complaints. But in fairness, the WIU had flagged that up well beforehand, you know, and they'd opened the ground 3 hours before kickoff. So I think people maybe should spend a little bit less time in the pub and get to the ground a little bit earlier.
This last minute rush in the ground is absolutely ridiculous, said the man who did a last minute rush for the podcast today. No, it's just ridiculous. And honestly, there's a growing debate now about, you know, there are so many internationals, so many tickets available. It's not so much the rugby core going anymore, it's people going to eventing, and good luck to them. Mm. But they don't have to drink a lot, these eventers, honestly.
Oh, my Lord. It wasn't like that.
It was actually a good crowd in Cardiff. They reduced the ticket prices this time. There were 70,000. I think for that game last year, there was only about 55.
So. Right, OK.
But they do worry for the game against Georgia this week. You know, more people have gone to the Australia game rather than Georgia. Well, it might not be such a big crowd this weekend.
The way Georgia went on the weekend, they'd be worried about everything, I would have thought. They were quite testy. If you'd seen social media this week, you'd see South Africa up in arms, really. They want to get rid of the coach, the team, everything. So the social media, Twitter and all that.
Newspapers.
Anyway, well, we love newspapers. Ireland, South Africa, thumping, convincing win for Ireland. Steve, significant result. Again, you said earlier, you don't want to take too much away from a win, as well as not giving too much for a defeat. But great for Ireland, but my God, huge question marks now.
Yeah, I watched quite a bit of that game, actually. I mean, the scoreline was slightly flattering. I mean, they scored 3 tries in the last sort of 9-10 minutes, didn't they? But and it's interesting, you know, we're talking about the 10-12 stuff about trying to play in Wales, trying to play an expansive game. Ireland didn't play any rugby in that game. You know, it was all about Murray and Sexton and their kicking game. And they just they out-muscled the South Africans from the start. You know, that Bundiaki was on his debut, smashed the prop from from that line. He went off injured. And that was the tale of the game.
He's the crusher England need, isn't he, Bundiaki?
Well, he might well be. Yeah. So I mean, we're talking about 10-12. You know, ball play. I mean, they did a few wraparounds with Sexton as they do, but it was just all about being absolutely physical. That Ian Henderson ran through Etzebeth at one stage again. You know, that told its story, and they smashed him physically. That lad on the wing, Stockdale. He's a big lump, and he looks a promising player. But all around the field, it was just Ireland winning all the collisions. You know, there was nothing too sophisticated about it, though.
We touched Steve. We get coaches telling us journalists that we know absolutely nothing, and the game has gone away from ex players. But you know what? You watch Ireland play. What's a key? It's territory, dominance up front, physical aggression on the game line.
Yeah,
and that's how it was when I played the game. It hasn't. The essence of the sport is exactly the same. And England didn't have that essence. And I don't know if I could ask you something. You know, Eddie always talks about wanting his gangsters and his nasty men. Have you seen a more polite pack than the English one at the weekend?
No, I haven't. There was absolutely no glowering anything. Honestly, it's not a game thing. Look, just throw a punch. Show something. I totally agree. I think, actually, Ireland are the toughest pack around.
Their scrum was brilliant as well in that game.
They got brilliant. Furlong, and it was going to be great scrum. For years. It's going to be the next
Furlong, McGrath, they're strong.
Exactly. Yeah. But also, you know, sometimes these guys spent so long in camp together, but South Africa didn't appear to me to know what they were doing. Wales had gone too far the other way, and neither Argentina or England seemed to have a real hard-nosed clue of what was meant to be going on.
No, Ireland, you're right, they've got a real edge in that pack. I mean, Henderson's got an edge about him. Yeah. I mean, Stander, Omani, O'Brien.
Can we talk coaches there? I mean, Joe Smith, he's got his critics, but Smith is an astute rugby man. He's got a computer for a brain. He's got Johnny Sexton, who on the field operates everything for him. Ireland know exactly what is happening all the time, and if they can get on top up front, they're going to crush you in the end, because the only way to stop them is to put a foot in the machine. South Africa under Alistair Coetzee they don't have a machine. I mean, nothing is working there now. And they might have lost by 1 point to New Zealand at home, but until they get consistent selection and they get a consistent understanding of how they want to play, then you're waiting for the next South African hammering. They might play well next week, but the week after they can get beaten again. Whereas Smith has everything at his fingertips. I'm afraid Alistair Coetzee, it's all slipped away from him. And South Africa, if they do get, they've got New Zealand in the next World Cup, they've got to do something really quickly, because managerially, focus-wise, they're all over the place.
I think Razzy Erasmus is sort of circling there, but you do feel sorry for them, because they've got this other element which no one has, and that's they've got to show recognition of their other races and colours.
Steve, I mean, Alistair Coetzee is not going to lose his place as head coach, is he? I mean, Razzy is there going to be in his sort of overlord position.
Yeah, sure.
But it's not going to happen. It's coach as well as players. It's difficult for them. And Coetzee has been bringing through black-coloured players as well. But there's no, even then, there's no consistency in what they're trying to do.
This is The Ruck. We will be back after this.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to The Ruck. Scotland won a game on Saturday and scored a lot of points. The only trouble is Samoa, who, God bless them, probably preparation was shocking, also scored a lot of points. Scotland this week got New Zealand. Are we acclaiming any sort of a revival year, Steve, when Samoa scored so many points?
Yeah, I mean, I only saw a few clips of that game. But yeah, I mean, that's quite a startling number of points to concede. Wasn't that the highest aggregate for a test ever at Murrayfield?
Something like that, yeah.
Staggering.
I mean, the previous record was 12 points, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be very worried about New Zealand coming next weekend if they're going to defend like that.
I think they'd have been worried about New Zealand coming if they'd won 38-0. There's a point there. Gregor Townsend will have them doing some fantastic things in attack, but he's got to get that defence going fast. And again, you know, I see an awful lot of Glasgow and Edinburgh playing in Pro 14, and there's some smart players there, but again, to come back to this word collision, trying to win a collision, I can't see how they can hold New Zealand, because New Zealand are so much stronger than in you know, at breakdown, at one-on-one tackler situation.
It'd be very interesting to see what team New Zealand pick, because with respect to Scotland, there have been times when they picked the second team there and still won. Probably not good enough to do that now, but I think they might leave a few out.
I see Dane Coles is out.
Well,
I mean, they've got a few missing already, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Isn't, you know, Hansen's quite happy to leave a few at home, actually. They're playing for the World Cup.
While this was going on, France, New Zealand, people were talking about second half comeback by France, but actually they were so far behind. The Laporte stroke Noves tandem. So far, Stuart, not doing anything?
No one can accuse me of hindsight here. I mean, the things I said when Guy Noves was appointed, he was 10 years past his sell-by date with Toulouse. If any country in the world could have made a worse appointment than Philippe Saint-André, it could only have been France, and Guy was one. Guy Noves was a genius a long time ago, and his course had run by, and I just... You know what I said about Alistair Coetzee there and the problems for South Africa? You can magnify those times five for France. France are going nowhere with Guy Noves there. They're in no shape. I don't know what they're trying to do. They're daydreaming.
And you have to say, the All Blacks, you know, you two boys have been quite hard on them in the past, but they're... they are really so far ahead at the moment, you know, and they just never look like losing unless they're playing a team coached by Warren Gatland.
Or Michael Checker.
Well, okay, that was once.
Fancy in Wales to beat the All Blacks, you see, then, Steve? I've actually got a sneaky feeling that.
Well, I mean, the thing
have
is,
as good a chance as they have for a while.
But, yeah, I mean, they might have. That's none. I mean, they've had any chance for 50 years.
I mean, like, going back to what I said about the plethora of international matches, to play New Zealand, South Africa and Australia, it's just nonsense in these days, in 4 weeks. It's just, however much you need the money, it's just absolutely ridiculous. Let's just go back very quickly to England and Australia, because we didn't... Let's just have Stuart give me your selections, then Steve, give me your selections, or give me your changes. I mean, I have to say, what I've got written down here is Rocco Degouni must stay because he definitely brought something. I'd like to see Harry Williams play. The bold thing would be to put him in this time, but I'm sure they'll leave him till Samoa. And I think Courtney should be six instead of Rob Shaw with Joe Launchbury in the second row. Stuart, your changes, had you been Eddie?
Had I been Eddie, I'd still keep Williams on the bench. God, the scrum's not great. Just about stick with that scrum, but it's getting tight with Cole and Hartley now. I would definitely play Courtney Laws at six, and I want him to be fired up all over the place, smashing people, which he wasn't doing from the second row. I would go, because I then bring Maro Itoje into the second row as a two-jumper, I would play George Cruz, even though he didn't go well. I like the fact that those Saracens know each other. I really like that second row. Flanker and eight, fine. Halfback's fine. Farrell obviously comes back. I would stick with Slade, but I can understand why he's probably going to go with Joseph. And I wouldn't go Rocco Degouni because I would have Daly, May and Anthony Watson at fullback.
Steve, are you going to go? Where are you going to put Itoje for a start?
Yeah, second row.
Second row instead of?
And I'd have Laws at six as well. But, right, okay. And I'd same as Stuart, I'd keep Cruz because I think he's so important as a line-out caller.
Yeah, line-out caller. He didn't play well on Saturday, but
no,
you're
he didn't.
Right. Yeah, okay.
I think he's very important to him in that respect.
Samoa game is going to be important for many reasons, but this one is incredibly important this weekend. Yeah. I'm just on the record as saying it's all become confusing to me, and the selection and the whole policy seems to be based on deliberately confusion, which I don't understand. And I think England have got to win this week. It's a bloody huge game.
Just
a couple more issues. There were some joke kits what everybody people have written into us to talk about. The Welsh kit for Saturday's game against Georgia looks like a sort of black t-shirt. England wore jerseys which the publicity said on last Saturday made them more difficult to spot to the opposition. Well, actually, they were difficult to spot, but if you're in the crowd, and Ireland and South Africa apparently played in the same kit.
Yeah, they did. That was terrible distinguish the two. Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Wasn't the problem with that England kit? That invisible thing might have been okay, but for the big sponsors logo,
huge sponsors logo,
gave the game away.
You could see, hey, the sponsors made sure you could see the logo, right?
I think they still put the fans though before the money. I'm pretty certain of that. It's not all about shirt sales,
no,
and sponsors logos. I'm certain that the RFU is thinking fans first.
You're quite right. The other thing is, very interesting to see where they're thinking is that. They've gone very, very quiet on their bid for the World Cup, which is announced this Wednesday. And I can tell you, as I told our readers yesterday, the horrible backstage shenanigans that are going on is evil.
I enjoyed the piece.
Yes. And very interesting. The RFU haven't said which way they're voting yet. However many times I asked different people, they still wouldn't tell me, which suggests to me that if they're not going to make it public, maybe they're not going to support the process, which I think is absolutely very, very bizarre, and will put them at odds with their own Billy Beaumont. We're just going to go really, really rapidly through. Steve, England, Australia, who do you fancy and by how many?
Yeah, I think England will still win despite having played so badly last week. It'll be closer.
I just got Australia by a small margin. I don't think England are really up there at the moment. Stuart?
I think we're now getting confused by the fact England keep winning. They play Argentina. Everyone says the main thing is we beat a good team. They didn't beat a good team. They beat a rubbish team. Mm. They didn't play that well in the Six Nations. Argentina was not top-line tournament away. If you look at the quality of performance, in the end, it comes back and it bites you in the butt. And I think the performances of England compared to the performance of Australia are such that even though it's at Twickenham, I reckon Australia start favourites and might just nick it. Yeah, I'm with you, Steve.
Let's just go two more games. France, South Africa. Now, it's one thing to it's one thing to lose to New Zealand, but I tell you what, it's a heck of a thing to lose to South Africa. I mean, that could be sadly the clash of the giants, but South Africa bounced back. They brought Vermeulen back into the squad.
Yeah, they can't. The thing is, they can only bounce back in South Africa, can't they? I think they haven't won away from home for about the same amount of time as Argentina haven't won against anyone top tier. So even with Guy, I have to go France there.
And finally, Steve, the big one, Germany, USA. they've taken it away from Leipzig, which they'll miss the crow. But how do you see it?
Yeah, I haven't done my research on that one yet, Steve. It's going to be in the paper on Friday yet, so I haven't got around to that one.
Okay.
Yet, so.
Well, I fancy if the German coach gets this right, I think he's got a great chance of knocking over a big tier two nation.
Wales, Georgia? Could that be that could be closer than people think?
Well, the Georgia squad, a magnificent try, which is already viral on that means it's on social media, that? Stuart. That means
it's not an illness.
No, it's not an illness.
That guy, the kid when he's just got to it just before it went over the double.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia looked like they're adding another dimension.
It wasn't a scrum.
No, it wasn't a scrum.
I thought it was a great Georgian try. It was a 20-metre push.
No. Georgia not like that anymore. Anyway, Wales and Georgia. Wales haven't got enough problems with Jonathan Davis being out. Now they've got the Georgians who'll be really up for that one. So a lot of internationals, a lot of issues. Thank you to Steve and Stuart for being with us today. We'll be back next week with another ruck. And no doubt with 1,001 other topics to talk about. Thank you for downloading us. Thank you for listening.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.